So I want to apologize because I'm going to tell a very depressing story. It's a story of people who die. And I feel like I have to tell it tonight because I've been given this opportunity. I mean, people in Baltimore die in a lot of ways, and I think a lot of us think about our own death. We think about dying with our family or in a hospice or something, but people in Baltimore die in a lot of very spectacular and violent and horrifying ways. And, you know, they die in back alleys and in fields and abandoned row homes and all sorts of horrible ways. And, you know, it's our job as a reporter to cover it and tell their stories. And, of course, by the time we get there, there's very little left, you know. Maybe blood on a sidewalk or, you know, abandoned glove from an EMT, but not much to tell. Still, we try to tell the story. And it's a story that's fraught with peril. So I'm going to tell a story about my attempts with my colleague, Luke Broadwater, who is a great reporter at the Baltimore Sun, to tell the story of people who died and how it can be almost as contentious, wrongly, as the murders themselves. It started for me back in 2006 when I was a reporter at the Baltimore Examiner. I was sent to cover a protest in Lower Park Heights. There were 100 people there. Now, I don't know how many of you read the Examiner, but we covered every protest in town. And if it was two people, it was a protest, because we had to write two stories a day. So I'm sure the commissioner can remember that we wrote every protest that ever happened. I even got good at taking pictures of people at weird angles just to make it look like there were more people there. So that's a little bit about journalism. Anyway, so there were 100 people there, and they were scared. They were concerned about what they thought was a serial killer in the neighborhood. They said that someone was preying upon women and murdering them. This is in Lower Park Heights. So I went to the protest, and I covered it. They had a placard with a woman named Tyler McCleary, and they were very adamant about their fear. But the police department said that there wasn't anybody preying on women and said that their concerns were, at that point, unfounded, that there was only one woman who had been murdered. Meanwhile, the community was saying there had been at least six or seven. And it was a very contentious moment. It was during a political campaign. And, you know, the homicide rate, as I talked to with the commissioner, can be very contentious in Baltimore. So I wrote a story, which became very controversial. You know, my paper, The Examiner, which was certainly not subtle, you know, said there was a serial killer. And, of course, you know, people took exception to that characterization. And the story became very, very contentious. A lot of people said it was wrong, and, you know, I suffered because of it, but nevertheless. So after that story was published, you know, I went back to the idea of how people die, because how people die in Baltimore is extremely important to how we live. So I dug around and did some research and started telling stories of women, and, you know, I found all sorts of gray areas, which is the hardest thing to accept about death, which is ambivalence, ambiguous circumstances. I found, for example, that in Baltimore City, we have hundreds of undetermined deaths every year. People who are found in suspicious circumstances, but the medical examiner can't rule homicide, suicide, natural, or accident. So their deaths end up in limbo. Now, many of these people are explained as drug addicts. So it's something that, you know, is not explained. But, of course, it doesn't help the family, and it doesn't really help the community heal, because this death forever ends in limbo. So while I was working on this, I went and read the autopsy of the Tyra McCleary, who the medical examiner said was a drug overdose victim. And yes, she did have drugs in her system, but she also had signs of asphyxiation. So the medical examiner ruled that her death was undetermined. So fast forward to 2008. While we'd written stories about this phenomenon, about undetermined deaths, a woman was murdered. But it wasn't just the story of another woman murdered, because it happened quite often. She was a drug addict. She had a record of prostitution. But she was also the daughter of our former police commissioner, Leonard Hamm. And Leonard Hamm, of course, was, you know, a well-known figure, and her story was a public story. People knew her because one of my former editors at The Examiner had written her story. So her name was Nicole Sesker. She was found under a porch. I went to the scene, and her body was gone, but you could see the detritus of a life lived on the streets. And, you know, there were cigarette, empty cigarette packs, matchbooks, empty soup cans. It was depressing. And she died. My colleague, Luke Broadway, at the time, looked into other women who had been strangled, because she had been strangled. And what he found was that three women also had been strangled within a short period of time. And we wrote a story about it. And the story created quite a bit of controversy. Four women strangled in such a short period of time, even in a city somewhat immune to violence, still caused a tremendous amount of consternation. And I think that as a reporter, we are suddenly swept up into another controversy about how people die. Not necessarily the deaths themselves, but the manner. So we did more research, and we dug deeper, and we found there were 29 cases of women with records of prostitution who had been strangled or had been beaten to death, who had been killed in the past 10 years. 20 of them were still unsolved. So the cases just continued to pile up. During that time, and during the time we were doing this story, we came across women, and we went out into the streets to talk to the women who were facing death. And they were the most courageous people I've ever met in my life. They lived on the streets. Their food and everything came from working the streets, getting into strange cars. And if you talked to them, asked them a question how they were doing, they would cry because no one talked to them, and everybody really hated them in some way. So during this period of time, as we were writing these stories and uncovering more deaths, police made an arrest, a man named William Brown. They had found the DNA on three of the cases we uncovered from 2003. So they arrested this man shortly after a fifth victim was found, named Brenda Hatfield, was found at the end of a path, at the end of a church, the New Psalmist Baptist Church in Northwest Baltimore. So they arrested this man, and suddenly the killing stopped. It ended. And I don't know to this day if William Brown was the murderer who murdered any of the current victims. There was an arrest made in Nicole Sesker, a man for beating her but not killing her. So it was a very, very strange situation. Because although we like to define death in Baltimore and we like to put it into a figure and a number, the truth is it's not defined. It is all gray area. And the people who die, I don't think their stories are not told. And so I guess as a reporter, I'm just here to, I guess, urge us to think about the way people die and not always shoot the messenger or think that a reporter is doing something untoward when they report on the bad things that happen in the city. People want good news. They want lower statistics. They want a better city, and I understand that. But by not telling the stories of the dead, we do a disservice to the community. And although this is a serious message, and I apologize for that because this has been a very fun night, I think it's something that we should all consider. You know, that the people who die and the people who are abandoned, deserve our attention, and that, telling their stories is one of the most noble occupations that a person can have. Thank you.